The following podcast contains strong language and is not suitable for young children or workplace environments.
You're listening to FatCast. We've upped our game. Up yours.
Hey, welcome to the FatCast, episode 2. I am Matt Loader, your prettiest princess.
And I'm Josh Look, and I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. Coming at you from the Fat Cave, the show where we like to talk about games, movies, comics, whatever other nerdy shit that we think is cool. Today on the show, we're going to talk about Couriers, Rift, some movie trailers that we've seen, Game of Thrones, some mess of other shit in there too. We're also going to have Dan Raspler on to talk about his post-apocalyptic board game, Scorched Earth.
So we have some breaking news that the Spiel des Jahres and Origins Awards were announced.
Yep.
And we actually don't give two shits about those.
Nope.
Maybe one shit.
No.
No? No shits.
No.
No shits at all for you, Spiel des Jahres. The first real thing that we're actually going to talk about is the game Couriers. For those of you who don't know, it is a dice-building game, which means that it is a deck builder that uses dice instead of cards. If you don't know what the fuck that means, congratulations, you're not an embarrassing nerd. But you also want me to explain it. So basically what you're doing on your turn is you are rolling some dice. You have a starting set of dice that are in a sack that you pull out blindly. X number of dice, 6 dice every turn, and you roll them, and depending on what you get, you can buy different monsters or summon different monsters. You can get different dice that you add into your sack for subsequent draws. And basically what you're trying to do is create a set of dice that you're drawing from that are going to kill the other dude's monsters while keeping your monsters alive to score points for you. So it's definitely pretty interactive. I mean, not super interactive in the sense that you're really planning your specific interactions turn to turn, but you're picking which sorts of creatures you want to have and what kind of creatures you're going to summon every turn to fuck with someone else and to best survive being fucked with.
It's more interactive than Dominion.
Yeah, well, I mean, yep. You know, masturbating is more interactive than Dominion.
Because you're thinking about someone
exactly,
else.
Because I'm thinking about someone else. So, you know. Couriers is just great. I mean, I really loved it. For those of you on the internets, which you should be, go check out my written review. I talk about it in more depth, what I really like about it. But it's great. It's a simple game, easy to pick up, plays pretty quickly, looks great on the table, has awesome art. Art style is sort of comic booky, not too campy, but also not too serious. It just... it's really, like, I think, a contender for Game of the Year.
Really?
Absolutely.
I like it. I've played it a couple times. I think that the deck-building genre is definitely a cool idea. I'm not opposed to it, but it's evolving for certain. There's been some awesome games in the genre, you know, that adds more to the Dominion formula, like Puzzle Strike and Nightfall. I like those games. Couriers is kind of a step backwards, where it takes it back to a more basic Dominion level, but it just adds that extra layer of interacting with people and the more visceral experience of rolling dice. That's fun. They're good-looking dice. They're fun to roll, you know, and if you're not into that, that's your loss.
Yeah, so. I mean, rolling dice is fun.
Bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get into rolling dice or you're a fucking fun-murdering asshole. So... then,
yeah.
And if that's the case, then, you know, go play whatever Brown Town Renaissance, you know, impressive game. Impressor, you know, Renaissance Impressor. You sew the neatest pants for the count. He needs new pants, and you've got to sew them.
That would be a good, like, kids' Euro. Like, the count needs new pants. That's the name of the game.
Yeah, well, not
it's like, hey,
count,
those
like,
are my pants. It's hey, kind of like, hey, that's my fish.
Hey, that's my pants.
Yeah, that's my Renaissance, you know, era.
Hey, that's my
pantaloons.
So Couriers is great. Check it out. It comes out in August. If you are fortunate enough to be at Gen Con, I think they are pre-releasing sales there, so try to get into the dealer's room early, pick one up. Definitely going to be a hot commodity, I think.
Yep.
One thing that does concern me, beyond the rule book being written pretty shitty, is that it has a $50 MSRP, which is a little steep, I think, for a game of that sort of heaviness. What you're getting in the box, I don't think it's a ripoff, you know, I mean, in terms of physical product that you're getting. You're getting 130 dice, cards, right. Some dice bags. I mean, it's not an outrageous price in terms of what you get out of the box, but it is definitely, well, it's not even a box. It comes in like a tin.
A tin, right.
But it's definitely going to make the game stay in the sort of hobby gaming ghetto.
Yep.
It's not going to reach the sort of mass market penetration that I think it should and has the potential to, given, you know, the game itself and the gameplay and everything.
Yeah.
But people aren't going to pop into Target and drop $50 on this weird game.
I think $40 would have been a fair price.
I think that even is pushing it in terms of mass market penetration. It, you know, $40 I think would have been a better price. I would have been happier.
Yep.
But it's still not in that cheaper. I mean, I think you got to go like $25 is
really,
which wouldn't even work. Yeah. Which wouldn't even work.
No.
But you know, you go to Target. Look at what games cost. Like, you know, Risk is $12 or something like that, or $20.
It's $24.99.
$24. So Risk, right? You got to be on par with Risk. If you're twice as much as Risk. Like,
that's bad
mom's
news.
Mom's not buying that for you. Sorry.
Bad news.
Sorry, dude.
Yeah, it's light enough.
And
it's light enough to be more than
Well, and it's not an enormous box like HeroScape.
Right.
HeroScape got away. HeroScape was $40. This is more expensive
than
HeroScape.
Which is absurd.
This is more expensive than HeroScape was when HeroScape launched.
Yep.
And HeroScape looked like, wow, that's $40 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
This, you look at it and you're like, well, I don't know how much are dice expensive. I mean, I personally, you know, I mean, in a sense, the dice are pretty expensive to make custom dice. But you know, your average consumer is not like, well, dice are really expensive. They're like, you know, dice are dice. Like, who the fuck cares? So that's going to be tough for them. Also, let's talk about QU words and quiddity.
Quiddity.
That is,
I'm not
that
a fan of that.
That is power. That is energy, that is mana, that is whatever the fuck you want to call it, that is in our regular gamer vocabulary, because that's what we're all going to call it when we play, when we're explaining it to other people, and all you're doing is confusing everyone and sounding like jackasses.
Yep.
I mean, I don't feel shy saying that you sound like a jackass for calling it Quiddity, because the game itself is really one of my favorite games of the year, and I am heaping praise upon it, so... no shame. Like, Quiddity is stupid. You blew it on that.
I agree.
Hopefully it wasn't one of the two designers.
Yeah, right. Let's do this cute thing where we change all the letters.
Hopefully it was a marketing guy or something.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That was like, wow, this is
so you got to make this game and all of, I mean, every chance you get, you got to go with the letter Q.
Yeah, because it's Quarriers.
Quarriers.
Because what the fuck? What?
It's not a game about mining.
No.
Yeah.
No, you don't do any mining.
Nope.
Well, they do. You do get. You do quarry creatures from the quay or something.
Yes.
Like, well, I don't know. Yeah, it's dumb.
But the game's good.
Game is awesome.
Yeah.
That if the, you know, my biggest complaints are that it's a little expensive and has stupid naming conventions.
Yeah. But other than that, fine game.
Check it out, definitely.
Yep.
So really, moving on now. Josh wants to talk about
what I've been playing.
Yeah.
I've been playing. A lot of two-player games recently because I've had trouble getting people over recently. Everyone seems to be pretty busy. So I've been busting out, you know, my favorite two-player games and kind of on a whim decided to come back to Space Hulk. I had kind of written off Space Hulk for a little while after playing Earth Reborn because Earth Reborn is so good and, like, pretty close to perfect that, you know, it does a lot of the same stuff that Space Hulk does that I thought that I don't really need to play Space Hulk anymore. But I took Space Hulk out, and we played it, and had an absolute blast. I was completely reminded of why I love the game and why I was willing to say it was my favorite game of all time for so long. And it's a lot of it comes down to its elegance and simplicity. And the fact that it has an atmosphere that it nails through its mechanics. Like, its atmosphere and its theme is hardwired into the mechanics itself, themselves. And that's brilliant. You can't not appreciate that. So, Space Hulk has been back on the table a lot, and I've been playing the third edition rules, which I initially wasn't thrilled with, because they were easier for the Marines, and I think it should be hard. But, I don't know what it is. Maybe I've gotten worse at it, but my Marines are dying, like, all the time. As they should. As they should. And, you know, I don't care. It's fun. It's when I do win, it's that much more satisfying. Yeah. So, continuing with that, I went and took out Incursion one night and immediately put it in the trade pile. I hate to say it, but, I mean, I don't want to pick on an independent, small design, publisher, but...
Oh, we'll get to that in a minute.
It didn't really do it for me. It kind of doesn't really have an atmosphere. It has a theme that I guess is cool, but it's got some other annoying little aspects about it, like not moving diagonal and, you know, spending most of my command points and making turns. It's kind of dumb. So, Incursion, you're getting traded. Space Hulk, you're awesome again. And Earth Reborn actually manages to feel like an entirely different entity. They're two very different games that you should definitely try to own both of. Well, if you don't play Earth Reborn, that's a disgrace to Ameritrash. It's brilliant. Brilliant game. One of the most brilliant games in the last 10 years. Play it or else I think you're severely handicapping yourself.
My opinion is less glowing. I mean, I think it's great. I like it a lot, but it's not...
What, not Earth Reborn or Space
Well, any of them, really, I guess. Hmm. Maybe I'm just not as
big a fan of... Dudes in a Corridor games.
Yeah, maybe I'm just not as big a fan of the genre. I mean, I prefer Dudes in a tactical mini situation, a little more, less Corridor-y. You know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of, like, HeroScape. I play some Warhammer, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I tend to look to that for my minis.
Well, let me ask you this. How into the movie Aliens are you?
Oh, I enjoy it. I mean, I get it. I get the atmospheric aspect. I mean, I think they're great games.
I love Aliens, I want to play that.
I don't mean to say that I don't think that Space Hulk and Earth Reborn are great games. I think they're excellent. I just don't think that they are the be-all, end-all of gaming for me.
For two-player games... I think they're A-listers.
I'm going to say most of the time I'd rather play HeroScape.
All right. Fair enough. I love HeroScape too. I mean, that's the other game that's constantly in our rotation, but we took a break from that. We played Space Hulk. I love it.
I think Space Hulk, for me, gets the shaft because Earth Reborn brings enough different stuff to the table. You know, it's a much more advanced.
Right.
I mean, it's still a simple, relatively straightforward game,
right.
But it brings a lot more to the table than a HeroScape. So if I'm going to step up from HeroScape to something a little more complicated, Space Hulk is going to get sort of skipped over to go all the way to the top there with like Earth Reborn.
Right.
And if I'm looking for something like simpler and quicker, I'm just going to knock out some HeroScape.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that, you know, setting up the map, but it's not like Space Hulk takes 2 seconds to set up either. So.
No. I guess that what I'm saying though, I mean like the difference between Space Hulk and Earth Reborn for me is that, Space Hulk is this, you know, it's Aliens in a board game form. Whereas Earth Reborn, now that I play it, I realize, wow, this is Fallout. This is the PC game Fallout in a board game form. I mean, and it's the perfect mechanic for it is the action points. It's just like the action points that you get when you play the old Fallout games. You know, it's just like I have 9 points. It costs 3 points for me to shoot my gun. You know, it's just the perfect mix of elements. They're very different games, and they're both they both have their place on my shelf now. So that was pretty much my big thing for gaming the week is coming to that revelation. So let's talk some video games. I've been playing a couple of pretty awesome video games. A couple weeks ago, the GOG.com, a favorite of both Matt and I. Good Old Games is what it stands for. Go there. It's a great site. They had a big sale on all the Interplay titles. So I bought myself Free Space 2, which was a great 90s space combat simulator. Free Space 2, there's a great mod for it that I immediately got on called Free Space Open. Updates all the graphics, gets you good resolution, and there's a great mod out there for the first Free Space, which is actually what I've been playing through, and I'm like 5 missions away from finishing it. Awesome game. I love it. I'm a big fan of the space combat sim genre, and I wish it would come back, because I think that it works with a controller in your hand, too. I mean, I'm still playing it with a joystick, but I love it. Free Space is awesome. If you're a fan of, you know, good high octane action or science fiction in general, it's great stuff. Definitely check it out.
High octane action, really?
High octane, yeah, dude. I mean, it's intense. The dogfights are intense, dude. I've been playing it, and I'm like, wow, this is way more action than pretty much anything else I've been playing in the last, you know, few years.
Flight sims are always boring as fuck to me.
Like, that's why I play fighting, space, you know?
Yeah,
flight
well, that's more
sims.
Fun, yeah. Did you ever play, like, Chuck Yeager's Air Combat?
No.
Yeah, that was
I'm not
going to
play
huh?
that. That sounds dumb.
It's a great day for flying.
So it's a great day for shutting the fuck up.
Yeah. Well, it was always boring as shit because I'd always like do the mission or whatever and then die because I couldn't land.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, landing is like super
yeah,
serious.
Fuck landing.
You're like, really?
Kind of like Top Gun for the NES.
Oh, God. Yeah, every mission. Oh, cool.
Yeah, I crashed. What have you been into?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Rift, actually. Which
I've played
is,
Rift.
It is a new-ish MMO. That is basically, I don't actually know if any of the dudes were involved with Warcraft, but basically it
seems
is.
Seems like it.
Yeah, it really seems like it. It takes a lot of the idea. If you play Warcraft or you played Warcraft, it'll be really seamless to jump in, which is, I think, great. I think it doesn't speak to a huge amount of longevity in the game.
Right.
But for my needs, I mean, basically I want to play it for a while, and if I play it until Star Wars comes out,
right,
well, then that's great.
That's what any MMO for me at this point is.
Yeah, that's great.
Is the next one until Star Wars.
But it's really well done. It takes a lot of the Warcraft ideas that you liked, really refines it, steals all the best bits, but is different, which is, I think, what's important at this point for me. You know, yeah. I hadn't played an MMO for a while, kind of got the itch, thought about going back to Warcraft, and was like, I don't really want to do that same old shit again, you know?
Right.
Like, whereas Rift is that same old shit, but in a very different way and with some different tweaks and some different
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah,
that
the
you
character
can do.
Creation thing is great.
I am. That's actually one of the things I'm really the most disappointed with.
Really?
Not the character creation. The character, like your the souls and the way that you do your character classes is
right.
really awesome.
That's what I'm talking
cool.
about.
That's
what
cool.
I'm talking about.
Because basically
I love
there's
that.
Four classes. And within each four classes, there's eight different sort of specializations that you can kind of put talent points into
right.
that figure out exact all of your abilities are based off of that. And you get to pick three of them to sort of put points into. And so you can have like vastly different rogues.
Right.
So you can be a rogue tank, which is kind of weird and awesome. Or you can be a rogue that plays exactly like a hunter from Warcraft, or a rogue that plays like a rogue from Warcraft, or a rogue that plays like some other different kind of stuff, a more spellcasting rogue. You have all these different kind of options, and you can put them all together in a weird combination. So
right.
like you can have a primary rogue tank that also is a bard and does like support abilities, or you can have a hunter that also tanks, or
yeah.
you know, you have all
yeah.
these kinds of weird combinations
yeah.
that you can
for,
put together.
For me, it's basically that World of Warcraft boils down to this exact formula for the entire time that you play it. You pick your class, and then that class has basically two stats that you want to pump. So you go and you do quests and you do raids and you do, you know, instances, everything you do to find gear to boost those two stats. That's all you do for hundreds and hundreds of hours. Whereas Rift, you know, it's like, well, I'm a warrior, but, well, what kind of warrior do I want to be? You actually get some choice in there instead of like, well, I'm a warrior, so these are my stats I need to go boost and this is my job.
Well,
I mean,
reasonably different,
I mean,
too.
You can kind of do talents. I guess you could argue that talents mixes it up in World of Warcraft.
Well,
but
the thing is, even within the talents, you're not playing a dramatically different class.
Exactly.
Like,
that's
if
what
you're,
I'm saying.
If you're a marksman hunter versus a survival hunter, yeah, you're playing differently.
You're playing differently, but
you're
still
not playing, like,
a
you're
hunter.
Still, you're still a hunter, yeah. Whereas this, you can play like, I want a tank. That's
yeah.
what I want to do. I want to be a fucking tank. Well, you can be a tank in, you know, two, arguably three of the classes out of four.
Yep.
You can build a tank spec, and you can be a tank. You want to do DPS, you could DPS with everybody. But do you want to, you know, like, do you want to be two-handed weapons? Do you want to be two one-handed weapons? Do
right.
you want to cast spells? You know, all these stuff you can do within the same class. You can kind of explore a lot of different elements without having to roll up a whole new character,
yeah.
Which is really fun. Plus, you can change on the fly. So I've been playing a lot with my wife. We've been, like, you know, tag team and stuff. And we both have like sort of a DPS, like basic questing spec that we play usually. But then if we come to like group quests, we can do them together because she
right.
switches over to her healer spec and I switch to tanking spec. and we can just, you know, it takes a while, but, you know, we can burn stuff down like that and do some really impressive stuff, and we can just kind of play and have a good time.
Yeah.
What I don't like, and I've been noticing more as I've been playing more, is that, you know, the character creation, the races and stuff, bespeaks to the, bespeaks? Is that even a fucking word? Whatever. So it's not very creative.
Okay.
The idea of the rifts, which is a whole other thing that's really cool. Basically, these rifts explode randomly, and
right.
the whole zone turns into like a fucking war zone, and everyone's running around doing these things, and you can automatically join groups with people, so you don't have to worry about that. But it's really cool.
Yeah.
Really, really awesome. Makes the game world a lot more dynamic and exciting, which is one of the big things. But the zones themselves are kind of boring. Like, you know, they're like vanilla Warcraft kind of vibe.
Right.
Like, there's like, well, here's the forest, and here's the deserty spot, and here's the, like, rolling hills, and here's, like, the farmy kind of zone. And it's just kind of like, well, you know, do something more exciting than that.
Sign
like,
me up for Farm Zone.
Yeah, well, that's where you start if you're a Defiant, is yep. sort of Farm Zone.
Farm Zone.
Yeah, and it's not very exciting. Like,
coming to you from Z-Man Games.
Yeah. I guarantee it'll outsell whatever cool thing.
It'll outsell Earth Reborn yeah. and, like, Roadkill Rally combined.
But, you know, similar with the race selection. You know, yeah. you have basically a dwarf.
You got dwarf, you got elf. And you got human.
And that's then you it. Have some sort of variations on that aren't yeah. very dramatic. You got a yeah. sort of bulky human.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, that's really it.
Yep.
Like, you don't even have, like, Tauren and gnomes. Like,
yeah.
you don't even have, like, the Warcraft level of kind of original Warcraft sort of weird races.
Yeah.
Like, there's just not a lot of variation there, which, I mean, I get it's pretty generic fantasy is what they're going for,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. And, I mean, they have some cool twists in terms of some of the creatures that you're doing and some of the rifts and events and stuff are really creative and really awesome, which is why it's so surprising to me that they don't have more exciting and interesting scenery
right.
and races
yeah.
and, you know, just taking this to, like, look, like, we get that you're kind of doing the Warcraft thing, but, I mean, Warcraft is beyond that. You look at, like, Outlands, you look at Northrend, you know, like, the stuff that they
yeah.
were doing there with
yeah.
zones...
More dynamic.
...were a lot more interesting to just
yep.
walk around in. It's like, I can only see, like, whoa, this is a fucking forest. Like, cool.
That's it.
Like,
yep.
for so long before I'm totally over it. But that is my biggest complaint, other than the fact that just the sort of general complaint that it's not doing anything that's going to be exciting enough to make me want to play for... a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're going to hit level cap, dick around for a little bit, you know,
yeah.
polish off some quests and do some stuff. But
yeah.
it's not going to be, it's not a long term. I don't
right.
think it's going to last super
yeah.
long term.
Yeah.
But great. Check it out. They have a free trial. You get 7 days. You can basically do everything within that.
Yep.
If you do really want to do that, I think there's some referral program that they advertise. I don't really know how it works. But if you really are excited about it,
mm-hmm.
maybe I'll get like a free, you know, like duck. Or something that'll follow me around. That'd be cool. So get at me if you want my like friend code or whatever
yeah.
the fuck they do that with. What else we got here?
I've been
Sonic.
Sonic Colors. All right. So
basically, Josh only plays things that are from like 1995.
Yep.
So next podcast we'll be talking about Mortal Kombat 2.
Yep.
And how awesome the special effects in Terminator 2 are.
Yep. Still playing Master of Orion 2.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
fun. But Sonic Colors is actually a new game. It came out in December, I think, or somewhere around there. And the word on the street that it was finally that Sega got their shit together with the Sonic franchise. And I got it for Christmas, totally forgot I even owned it. And the other day I'm like looking through like, I really should play like a Wii game to justify owning this thing. So I'm looking through, I got Sonic Colors. I'm like, wow, I haven't played this. Pop it in. All right, it's pretty good. The controls, I'm liking it. Camera isn't doing anything I don't want it to. Game's fun. I hit level 2, or the second level I go to, and I'm like head over heels in love with this game. It's so fun.
Is it like third 3D? Like,
it's kinda? 3D, but it keeps going to the side scrolling too. It kind of switches between like three or four different viewpoints.
So it's like Paper
and it's
Mario?
Not jarring at all. No, it does it on its own. The level design didn't really impress me in the first world, but once I hit those, you know, other worlds, it's really good. I mean, like, it's not quite up to par with Donkey Kong Country Returns, but it's kind of in the ballpark.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I'm having a ton of fun with it.
I'd pretty much given up on Sonic after.
I did, like, too. I did, too. But apparently I was like, well, I hear it's good. I'm going to ask for it for Christmas and finally get around playing it. It's good. It's a good time. If you have a Wii, it's probably cheap at this point. Give it a shot.
I'm into it.
Yeah. What'd you go see?
So I finally went and saw Super 8. By the time this comes out, I'm sure it's not going to be in theaters anymore. I don't even know if it still is.
But, it's still in the top 10 box office.
It's fucking awesome, and yeah. It deserves to be. If you did not see Super 8 yet, try to go see it at like the second run theater if you have one, or you know, definitely get it when it comes out. Netflix the shit out of that movie, or buy it, actually, really, because I think I'm comfortable putting it in, like, probably it's going to, not counting trilogy, counting trilogies as one movie, right. I would put it in probably a top 10. Of all time.
Really?
It's fucking awesome.
Really?
It is, you know, right in line with, like, Goonies and, you know, those classic 80s adventure, you know, kind of kids going on crazy stuff. Monster Squad, you know.
I was
like,
about
all
to say, you know what's
like,
my favorite one of those movies? Monster Squad. It's my favorite.
And Wolfman doesn't have nards.
Wolfman does have nards.
Well, he does have nards, after
he
all.
He does have nards.
But, you know. Does Wolfman have nards, I guess, is the question.
That was the question. He kicked him in the junk. He went down. Yep. It worked.
Wolfman does have nards.
Yep.
So, okay. Glad we cleared that up. But Super 8, yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It really is awesome.
Yeah.
If you don't like Super 8, then you are a heartless monster with no taste.
That's easy.
Yeah. I mean, and definitely, because it's really, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great.
I will go see it. I will. It's just that, you know, summertime is the superhero territory.
That's when you got to see it, though. It is
and
a summertime.
I feel like
it's a summer movie.
Yeah.
It is all, but it's a summer movie, too, because it's that kind of, like, kid adventure summer movie. Like,
nice.
It's just, it's this sense of, like, wonder and excitement and kids doing, like, crazy things. And, you know, it's just, it's really pretty much pitch perfect like, the whole way through. The kids, the actors in it, the rapport between them, the way that they talk to each other and interact with each other is just so incredibly perfect. It actually kind of reminds me of like Freaks and Geeks.
Really? That's high praise indeed.
In the way that they're all like interacting with each other and that it feels like really like natural, like this is how we were. Like,
awesome.
Maybe it's where I'm a right age for this, you know, because it's set like I would have seen this when I was, you know,
right.
6 years old and it would have been the 80s and I would have been really excited about it.
Yeah.
And this just reminds me of that.
Speaking of 80s and reminding me of things, the movie that I recently saw, I'm almost embarrassed to say that I went to go see it, but I saw Transformers 3.
So it's Dark Side of the Moon.
Like, it's right? Dark it, of the Moon.
Whatever.
The Dark like, really? Of the Moon. Yeah, really? It's Dark of the Moon.
Transformers?
Dark of the Moon.
Who greenlit that?
Well,
not the movie. I don't even mean the movie. I mean, fine. Who greenlit the movie in general? Like, that's fucking embarrassing. But who didn't think like, oh, let's take like one word out of one of the most iconic album titles of all time. Like, let's call this.
Let's
like,
take most
let's call
of the
this,
words.
Like, Sergeant Eggplant's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that just doesn't work. Like, it's silly.
Not only is it silly, but I'm pretty sure that Dark Side of the Moon establishes at the end of the record that there is no Dark Side of the Moon. Matter of fact, it's all dark.
Yeah, well, I'm also pretty sure that, like, Dark of the Moon doesn't make any sense as a fucking sentence either.
No, it's just, well, okay, nothing about the movie really makes sense.
Well,
that's
guess,
not
I guess
what
it
you
is.
Sign up for.
I guess
when
that
you
is
go
true.
See it, that's not what you sign up for. I kind of liked the first Transformers when it came out. Like, I knew it was bad. I knew that it was dumb. But I kind of got into it anyways. It just made me, you know, go back to, like, I used to be really into the Transformers, and, you know, it was fun. Second movie is, you know, a fucking catastrophe. It's awful. But the third one is probably the best out of all of them, which isn't saying much because, again, I know they're bad movies. Not saying it's great, but it's a fun movie, I think. I had fun watching it. I mean, it's well-staged action scene after well-staged action scene.
Well, listen, you're not going into Transformers because you're expecting the latest Merchant Ivory Oscar winner.
No, I want to see robots beat the fuck out of each other. And I got that. I got that.
Fun. I mean, that's the thing. If you go into this expecting great things, like, well, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
If you go into it hoping to have some fun, like, eat some popcorn, like,
right.
See shit happen,
yeah.
Like, well, then that's a very respectable way to go into a movie.
Right.
And it pisses me off to no end that people can't distinguish between, like, film and movies, I think.
Right. No, I
and
see
that,
the difference.
And that they're two different things. And
yep.
that, yeah, film is art and can be very important and has a lot to say and is great and people should appreciate it. But at the same time, like, you can still go to the movies
right.
to go see a movie
yeah.
and have a good time and just
well,
not think.
That's what I got, you know? I didn't go to it to see that. I just wanted to see, you know, robots
yeah, I mean,
beat
I didn't
the hell
see
out
any
of each
the Transformers
other.
Movies, but I mean, you know.
I mean, it was I'm not going to praise Michael Bay. He does suck. He makes bad movies.
Listen,
this is his best, though.
The Rock? Come on. The Rock.
The Rock,
the
I don't
Rock
think
was,
it's his.
The Rock was kind of awesome.
I don't think
and
The
that
Rock
was
is his.
Definitely Michael Bay.
Really?
Yeah, it was that, and I don't remember which came out first, that or Bad Boys, but those were like his two,
yeah,
like,
right.
I'm
his
Michael
two,
Bay,
yeah.
I'm like fucking
no,
doing
The Rock
things.
Is an awesome movie.
The Rock is great.
Yeah.
The Rock
yeah,
is,
I like it.
Is awesome.
But yeah, Transformers 3, I mean, for a Transformers fan like myself, it was probably the most satisfying one. Soundwave was in it. That's a favorite of mine. Laserbeak, he's there. He's cool.
Wasn't like the one that's like a Volkswagen Beetle not allowed to be in it because of some like licensing thing.
There was
or some
Bumblebee.
Shit,
yeah,
right?
Bumblebee.
Yeah, he taught.
They're
he was
all
cool, right.
Yeah, they're
he was
all
one of my favorites.
GM cars.
Yeah, yeah, because
they're all GM cars.
Because fucking A, America, right? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah,
like,
they show.
Michael
they
Bay
show
was like only American cars.
Yeah, they show in the first movie the Volkswagen Bug, and you know the kids like looking at it. Like, oh, I might want this, I think. And I think that's how it works. And Bernie Mac's kind of like, no, you don't want that one. You want this one. So, yeah, I mean, they're dumb movies, but Transformers 3 is probably the best out of all of them. And if you can shut your brain off for 2.5 hours, then it'll certainly deliver the goods. If you can't do that, then, you know, stay the fuck out of my life. So you're no fun.
I agree. No
all
fun.
Right. Yep.
Battling Tops and Transformers.
That's right. Amen. Seen some good trailers recently, too.
Yeah, well, one that I really do want to talk about because...
Let's do it, yeah. A little bit.
I have a pretty vested interest in the,
I do, too.
Well, I have vested interest, I guess.
I think
that's some, like, bullshit nerd.
I think it's well-renowned around
that is,
the board.
That is some serious nerd hyperbole to say that I have a vested interest in Conan, because I don't. I just really like Conan. So
I'm a pretty diehard Conan fan.
But,
so.
But being a huge Conan fan... I mean, I have a dog named Conan.
Yeah.
So I'm a big Conan fan, and... I was really, really not excited about the fact that they were making a new Conan movie because I was pretty confident they were going to fuck it up. And then when they released that first trailer...
Yeah, that was bad.
I was just...
Ugh.
I was like, well, now I'm not even going to go see it because I'm just going to be bummed that this is just terrible shit. Listen, if you're making a fantasy movie, like, you don't need, like, new metal.
No.
Like, just stop.
That was the first thing I thought when I heard they're making a new Conan movie. I'm like, I hope that there's not new metal.
Yeah.
I'm serious. That was the first thing I thought.
Because that pretty much sets the tone.
Yep.
Is the thing. Is A, I mean, it's terrible. It's fucking noise.
It's bad music to
begin with. Bad music.
Yep.
But beyond that, it really showcases that you don't fucking get it. And
right.
you're just making a shitty movie.
Right.
Like, if you have just a shit... If Linkin Park is on the soundtrack to your fantasy movie... Fuck
not, yeah,
you.
Yeah, not your giant robot movie. Because...
Yeah, fuck that, too. Actually,
yeah.
Linkin Park is on your soundtrack to anything. Fuck you. But double fuck you if it's on your fantasy movie
yeah.
soundtrack.
Yeah.
So this trailer was like, you know, all, you know... like, whatever nonsense. And then, like, Conan's all, like, slow motion, like... you know?
I hate that fucking flashing, terrible. Like, where it starts to flash, and then it just, like, starts flashing faster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was a terrible trailer that
yep.
just made it look like total shit.
Yep.
But they released a new trailer yesterday, a couple days ago.
It's more like recently. A scene.
Yeah, it was like a sort of a preview
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, I don't think it's a trailer, because the stuff they show in that trailer, you can't show as a trailer.
Yeah, I guess.
It's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. And while I still don't think it's going to be like the best Conan movie or the Conan movie I would like to see, it's going to... I'm moving my expectations up to, oh, I will go see this, and I will enjoy it as a dumb, fun... You know, sort of barbarian
yeah.
sword fighting movie.
Shut your brain off
yeah.
and just enjoy
but
kind of movie.
I think I'll be able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
This little scene trailer thing looked cool. I mean, yeah, it's not perfect,
no.
but it's fucking crazy stuff happening and
yep.
Conan being a badass. And it didn't take itself too seriously, which I think is also a good way to go with it because if you take yourself too seriously, you can't get away with a lot of bullshit. Whereas if you're not taking yourself too seriously, you can do some things that, like, I would roll my eyes at, but because you're not being super serious about it, it's like, well, whatever, you know, like, it's goofy.
You're
going
to have
to
punch a camel in the face eventually.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you read the Robert E. Howard stories, I mean, there is sort of a campiness to it.
A little bit. Conan.
It's serious, but it's also got this kind of,
gigantic mirth about him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Mirthiness.
Another trailer that hit the interwebs yesterday was the new Spider-Man trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man. I watched it, and I was pretty not into the idea of a new Spider-Man movie at first, and then I saw some pictures, and I was really into the idea. Now I see the trailer, and I'm back to, like, well, whatever. It's not bad. It's just that it feels like it could have easily been Tobey Maguire in those scenes instead of the new guy. It seems very samey, and I don't think that a reboot should feel samey at all. I mean, a reboot's a chance to try something entirely different.
Especially when it's, like, what, a decade? Less than a decade?
Less than a decade. Like, I mean, I guess the way that you look at it is that they're going to make Spider-Man movies no matter what. And I think Raimi kind of dug the series into a hole in the last one.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you got to approach. I think you can approach it like Batman, and I think Batman was done very legitimately, where you sort of have, like, different Batmans.
Yep.
I mean, some of them were terrible. Don't get me wrong, like, terrible, right. Terrible movies. But the thing is that they sort of didn't really care about
continuity. They
continuity
didn't connect,
whatever, or canonicalness. Because the thing is that the universe that Batman exists in as a comic is gone through so many reboots.
Yep.
Not so many. But, you know, there's definitely been reboots. There's so many different
iterations. It
changes
over time.
Yeah, there's definitely been so many iterations of what the reality of Batman's universe is.
Yeah.
That as long as if you choose to make a sequel, like, that's fine. But otherwise, like, don't give a shit about continuity. Don't give a shit about having the same person be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Don't give a shit about, like, you know, who he fought before. I mean, try to mix it up because there's so many cool villains and stuff. But I don't see why you need to make it this whole, like, big deal reboot. Like, just another movie. Like, just, okay, Spider-Man movies, they're happening. Like,
mm-hmm. He is fighting the lizard in this one, which I think is what they should have done in the third one. Because Venom sucks. I want to put that out there, that I think Venom is really stupid.
Venom is one of these,
as a character.
Did he come out in the 90s?
He's one of those characters that works in the 90s and only in the 90s.
He's
like Gambit, you know?
Yeah, he's very much a 90s, like... Rob Liefeld,
exactly.
Sort of, like,
right. He's Todd McFarlane.
Cable.
Todd McFarlane is the one who ushered him in.
All that shit. Just
It belongs in a certain time period, not outside.
And
of it.
It was cool when I was like 10.
Yeah. And Carnage, don't even fucking bother. Carnage was dumb when it happened. But Venom sucks, and Raimi knew that Venom sucked, and the studio was like, "You got to put Venom in this movie. It's what the fans want." And he fucked him over like he should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I give him credit for that. So, another thing I've been watching, finally, is Farscape. I'm a bit of a ways into the first season. It's a show I've attempted to watch several times, shutting it off, usually in the first episode, because it seemed really stupid. But I finally sat all the way through it and started watching the second episode, and slowly have warmed up to it. It's good fun. I think that the thing that I eventually came to as a conclusion was, like, well, I like science fiction, and I also like Muppets, so why can't they exist in the same realm? And it's fun.
I'm into it.
Yeah, Muppets are great. Yeah. They're impressive.
Dark Crystal is a fucking classic.
It is, absolutely.
I mean, personally, I was scared of Skeksis when I was a little kid.
Yeah. I mean, never mind the Muppets. The Muppets are just genius all around.
Yeah,
the Muppet show is great. But, Farscape, it's fun stuff. However, the thing that made me interested in it was there's a certain other science fiction show that I'm known to be the stalwart defender of.
Because it really does need defending, because it's not good.
I didn't think that it needed defending. It blew my mind when I found out someone couldn't like Firefly. But somebody called... Firefly, a poor man's Farscape, and I'm pretty sure that was Skeletor, but finally watching it, and it's no Firefly, that's for sure, but it is fun.
So it means maybe I'll make it past a few episodes.
What is the what is the criticism? It's too witty. I hear that a lot.
It's too witty.
When the
fuck
just, was wit something
I think
you
it's too
didn't want?
Is the problem? It just is totally non-compelling.
I don't understand.
I couldn't get into it. It looked pretty low budget, which was kind of disappointing.
It's TV.
Okay. Yeah, it's TV.
Sure.
Whatever. You know, you can get away with stuff.
Yep. You're not gonna get Star Wars.
But it looked especially low rent. I mean, like. Compared to, like, Star Trek's or, you know, I mean... It looks pretty low rent. And it just... I didn't give a shit about anyone. And they were all just like... You know, like, they seemed just douchey. Like, what's his name? Dude tried so hard. He just seemed like a douchey Han Solo.
All right.
You know, and it's just like,
He is a lot like Han Solo, but I don't think he's douchey.
You're trying to be Han Solo and you're just actually douchey.
You gotta give it at least 3 episodes.
We'll see someday.
Like any TV show.
So something that did wrap up recently and ties in with 2 awesome things that I've been doing is A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones TV show on HBO finished up. And I mean, I guess that was a good bit ago, but the new book just came out, so we're going to talk about it now. But first, the TV show, it's awesome.
It is.
It's just... It's great.
It's pretty much perfect.
The thing is that it's as perfect as it can be.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
How I feel about like Lord of the Rings. There's no way that you're going to get everything that's in the books. There's no way you're going to have all the nuances, all the depth of storytelling, all the interesting inner monologue stuff, you know, whatever, because it's a different medium. But as far as translating it to medium, it's pitch perfect. It gets all the feeling of, I think, the book. It gets all of the vibe that you're going for. It really develops the characters in the way that I think they are developed in the book. It doesn't pull any punches, definitely. Personally, I was a little shocked at how much dirty sex there is in it.
Some friends of mine, like, they talk about it. They're like, we approach that show with, all right, who's getting it doggy style this week?
I gotta say, have you finished watching it?
I'm almost.
Well, actually, it doesn't matter because this seems totally irrelevant to any story elements. But basically, for exposition...
I know what happens. So.
Yeah, not even that. I mean, for exposition, right? So Peter Baelish, he has a lot of like inner monologue in the first book where he's sort of like talking about stuff and kind of laying things out. So obviously, you can't really do inner monologue. So he has to be telling someone. So they added this character in, like red hair, Red Jane or something. I don't know. She's a hooker. Or a whore, or whatever.
Right.
Not a hooker. They don't really call them hookers.
They're whores.
So she's a whore that is up in Winterfell, and she's sort of like, you know, so Theon expositions to her while he's, like, having sex with her. Then, like, Master Pyrcel, however you say his name.
Yeah.
You know, expositions to her while he's having sex with her. Like, she just, like, travels around having sex with characters so that they can do their inner monologue to a character that doesn't matter to the story.
Yeah.
Because if it's a character that matters to the story, well, then that would change the tone that someone knew this person's, like, secrets and kind of things. But then there's this scene with Peter Baelish where, you know, he does own a whorehouse. And, like, so this whore and this other whore are, like, having, like, pretty vigorous, like, dirty sex for an extended period of time. Like, it's a 5-minute scene. And he's just, like, talking to them about, like, the kingdom and stuff. And then, like, interspersed with, like, all right, now take her from behind. Like, it's just, like, it's really, it's kind of weird. Like, I think it's pretty unnecessary. And I'm not really sure what they were going for. In throwing all this, like, extra sex in? Because, I mean, there's a fair amount of sex in it. Like, there's a lot of sex in it.
I felt dirty when I was reading
that.
I'm not offended at all. I mean, it just felt weird because it's like...
You don't see it.
Yeah, well, because, A, like, if I want to look at naked people fucking, like, I don't really want to listen to Peter Baelish, you know, like, like I don't want to have a boner and be, like, listening to some dude talk about murdering
the
king.
I don't want Peter Baelish anywhere near that boner.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's weird, you know, so it's like, well, this isn't, like, turning me on, you know, like, I'm not getting, like, turned on by this. It's just kind of weird, like, why do you have to have them, like...
Shock value.
Yeah, I mean,
shock
and that's
value.
The thing is, it's just kind of
what it comes
it
down
feels
to.
Kind of cheap. Feels kind of cheap, and that's the I think the one the one thing that I really am not a huge fan of.
Yeah,
is that it just feels like they're putting this that stuff in, and there's enough shocking stuff. I mean, like 2 episodes in, like a horse gets its head chopped off, and you know, people are getting like maimed, and there's plenty of like dirty sex. I mean, the first episode has dirty incestual sex.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's fucked up. Like there's plenty of shocking fucked up stuff without having to add in this extra like
a whole new bucket load of fucked up. Yep.
Yeah, well, it's not even that it's not even more fucked up. It's
I don't want to start on this tirade, but I will say that it's a lot like my problem with the Watchmen movie.
Mm, yeah.
Is that it's just it's shock value. And I guess one could argue that with Watchmen, when the comic came out, it was shocking. And that stuff is less shocking now.
So they had to ramp
up. So they had to up the shock value. That's not the case with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Game of Thrones.
Incest is going to be fucked up from here on out.
Yeah. Murdering children. Murdering
fucked up from here on out.
Yeah, it's just there's plenty of shocking fucked up stuff.
Yes.
Plus with characters getting killed off and this, you know, things like that book is not fucking around. Like
no.
And nope. There's no need to make it less fucking around.
Yeah.
Tell me about the book a little bit. So the new book, Dance with Dragons, finally came out. 6 years, I think it was 6 years.
2004 is when the last one came out.
So six or seven years.
Six or seven.
So a long ass time.
Mm-hmm.
People have asked me, is it worth the wait? And I mean, that's a hard question to answer because it's like, it's fucking awesome. Would it have been better if it had come out much sooner? Yes.
Would have been appreciated.
Yeah, would have liked it. Especially because... good old Mr. Martin writes the cliffhangers. As I was getting towards the end of this book, you realize that, you know, the book, for if you've never read it, is structured in point of view chapters. So you have different characters' point of views, and it's this huge epic, so there's tons of people all over the place that are not interacting with each other in any way at the time, you know. So you get close to the end of the book, and you realize, like, wait a minute, like, there's not enough space. There's not going to be another chapter from that character's point of view. Like, where that character left off, like, there.
That's it.
That's it. Fuck.
Yep.
Fuck.
Yep.
Like,
I hate that about it.
Which is,
I mean, it's great, but I hate it.
So it's awesome, but it's so, like, I want the next book, like, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like,
stat.
I'm fucking, like, just itching.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's back how I felt when I finished book four. Waiting for this one. So I'm really hoping that it's not going to be another, you know, 6-7 years.
Yeah.
He's saying that he's got most of the next one already written.
Well, he said that about this one.
But he did say that about this one. So who the fuck knows?
Skip the football season this year, Mr. Jordan. Or Martin. Oh, shit.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God.
Oh,
what did I just do?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, don't watch football
well,
this year.
Don't die either.
Yeah. Don't die either, please.
That would be bad.
Yeah.
Because unlike Robert Jordan, you are maintaining an awesome series throughout.
Yeah.
Whereas Robert Jordan dying was probably the best thing to happen
to the Wheel of Time.
Unfortunately, I mean, not speak ill of the dead because he did the first few books in that were amazing, but yeah, he definitely fucked that up. But yeah, this is great. If you are a fan of the series, you will not be disappointed. If you are not a fan of the series at all, get into it. Like really, like it's not fine literature, but it's really interesting character-driven storytelling.
Stuff, yeah.
Yep. I mean, the thing is, it's really character-driven, but it also has interesting like plot stuff too.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's to me, it's really about the characters, but the plot is compelling. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening, twists and turns, and it's also cool because it doesn't really pull punches. You know, I mean, it's some of the stuff is like, wow, that's pretty grim.
Yeah,
but it feels like a real dirty ass world, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I read an interview with him recently where he was talking about how he hates reading books about war where nobody dies.
It's bullshit.
And it's like, you know, yeah, that's true, you know.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think he's doing it for shock value either. I mean, I think it's just a natural thing, you know? Like you have all these people, like, they're gonna fucking die. Dudes are fighting each other with swords. Doesn't matter how badass you are, like, you're not fucking Conan. I mean, I love Conan, but Conan
would have died eventually.
Yeah, Conan. Yep. Conan, you know what? When he it didn't get written yet, but yeah, Conan got killed.
Yeah.
Like definitely very killed.
Yep.
Like, you know, it happened. So the fact that it's happening in this story is makes it a little more compelling, and it also allows the characters to develop a lot more. I think that there is this death and destruction, and characters you care about dying, and characters you don't care about living, and you know, you think he does a good job of switching up your allegiances a little
bit too.
Making characters really multi-dimensional. Everybody has something kind of shitty about them, and everybody has something.
It seems
kind
like
of redeeming
when you're
them.
Reading about them from a chapter that isn't their point of view, you fucking hate them.
Yeah,
and then you read that point of view chapter, and you get the inner workings, and you're like, I may not be okay with what you do, but I understand you.
Yeah, which is great.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
I love that about the series.
So definitely get into that.
Yeah.
So we're here with Dan Raspler, who is the designer
of what I hear is an awesome game called Scorched Earth. He also served as an editor at DC Comics. He edited years of Justice League and the big old monster that is Kingdom Come, which is pretty significant. So thanks for being here, Dan.
Good to be here.
So, Dan, I have not played Scorched Earth. Give me the pitch.
It's a post-apocalyptic adventure game. 3-4 players. Driver's seat action across the wasteland. Lots of monsters and role-playing elements. You have a driver, and you have stats that you tweak as you accomplish various missions and go on different quests. There's also a trading game built in, sort of Merchants of Venus style pickup and delivery, and lots of weapons and upgrades and details that you could put in the vehicle. So there's a lot of juice in there, and it's a very, we think, well-realized post-apocalyptic world. It has the whole, from the little individual weirdos that you might meet in the wasteland to the little cultures in the different cities, and we worked on it a really long time, and we were very happy when Zev and Z-Man Games picked it up.
So, actually, it's good that you mention Z-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So, with Z-Man now being bought, I'm sure that it's pretty early to know exactly, you know, where Scorched Earth is going to fit in this new path that Z-Man's going down. Do you have any, you know, concerns or any thoughts on that subject?
Well, we're happy to sign with Zev because we trust Zev. He's a really good guy with great taste and has a huge amount of energy. He's talking right now. It's too early to tell. We haven't spoken to folks at Philosophia, and Zev was going to be meeting with them and going through the different projects that on his slate over this stretch of time, and we'll be talking to Zev in the next week or two to get the lowdown on what the long-term plans are. So we're very happy about the way things have gone.
How many other people did you bring the game to other than Zev?
Zev was really our very first specific pitch. We showed it to a handful of other publishers, but very informally. We weren't really trying to get it picked up. So we were very happy when Zev he played it with us and had a good time and made us so expressed interest. So it was great. We couldn't have been happier. This is obviously kind of a wrinkle,
right?
But we'll see where it goes.
So I've played it a number of times and seen it through a few revisions of rules and stuff. And there's a couple things that really stand out. I mean, your description, I don't think, does it justice.
Okay.
Because you just kind of named, you know, you said, well, I mean, it sounds awesome still.
I could add a couple of things. It has the RPG board game vibe of constantly accumulating more cool stuff. You get more cool stuff. You sort of specify your character. You have half a dozen stats that you tweak and modify as the game goes on to kind of make yourself, as you can imagine, the different archetypes. Be brainier guy or musclier guy or crueler guy, and then your sort of political affiliations with the different towns. You also get to customize that.
So one of the things that really jumped out at me a lot as being unique and being, I think, much more interesting than the way it's done in games like other adventure games is that it's almost like a paragraph game built in on the cards that you're drawing and the activities that you're doing, because you're actually using your stats that you are building up to potentially have different encounters on the cards that you draw for different things. So, you know, if you have, you know, you see a bunch of bandits in the distance, you know, do you have the shooting skill? Well, then you can try a shooting challenge to shoot them. Or if you don't want to do that, you can try to go talk to them because you have, you know, a lot of whatever it is, you know, like, charisma.
Half the encounter, there's you know, like Arkham Horror, at the end of your turn you generally pull a card. There's two types of cards. One are sort of typical encounters where something, you read a little paragraph, you might have a little choice. The other half is a brand new style that we developed that's sort of like half Arkham, half Tales of the Arabian Nights, where you get to make moral choices or sort of bigger picture choices in how you respond to things. We call those dilemma cards, and it's an unusual approach because, as Matt says, it is a little bit read a paragraph style. Obviously, the paragraphs are all a very small type on cards, but it's, you know, it's very rich, and you do skill checks, and based on where you are on the map, you meet whether you can meet our faction of mutants or the scientist faction or the military faction, stuff like that. There's all sorts of weird characters populating the landscape.
Also, really quick, the combat. It's not what most people would expect, right?
It's weird because we obviously you want it to be different from other games, other similar games. We chose to make it diceless. Instead, we pull a card to resolve combat. So there's a handful of Fantasy Flight games that do the same kind of thing, where you pull a card to resolve. Ours is sort of a random number generator, 1 to 20, and all the combat specifics, the critical hits and the weird details, if you get caught on, if it's a flame weapon shooting at you, whether you get caught on fire or not. If it's a harpoon gun that's nailing you from the side, whether you get spun around or not. All that is built into a single card deck. It makes it very streamlined. The combat process is very easy. One card pull, whether you hit, how much damage, what the special effect is. Because we know how ambitious the game is. It has, you know, in addition to a detailed combat, vehicular combat system, simpler than Car Wars or that kind of game, but it still has a fun... In order to justify the amount of detail that we wanted, it needed to have some meat on the bones. It needed to be a tactical, interesting choices of whether you can get around the guy and hit him on his blind side, whether you can take out his tires with your tires, that kind of thing. Some detailed car encounters, but also the bigger picture, strategic post-apocalyptic wastes, different factions over here, picking up weird gear over here, fighting a monster. Like, we wanted the Fallout game style, individual encounters, plus the car war, the like Road Warrior scale, zooming across the landscape, plus monsters, plus all the rest of the stuff. So we knew we would be very ambitious. And then we have this crazy, paragraph. It's a steep learning curve. I won't kid you. But at this point, the game is about 2 hours long, so we're really psyched about it. And thanks for asking, because I guess it'll get people psyched to play.
I can't wait for it to come out so I can play it myself more. And with nice, you know, stuff.
I just want to play it. Like, I've heard so much about it that I feel like I'm missing out big time. So I know that for a while, one of the comments that I heard quite a bit was that it is, you know, it's a long game. It's kind of a time commitment, which doesn't really jive with not necessarily, you know, the entire board game playing community, but I think I'm willing to say that, like, the popular census on, like, Board Game Geek and stuff is like, oh, it needs to fit, like, this certain
time. It has to
be
2 hours long.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, like, how much of a concern of that was...
The first time you play the game, it's not going to be 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's, you know, as with most games, it takes a lot longer the first time. This one has a very steep learning curve. There's a sort of a basic game you could play, but once you start adding in, we wanted a detailed injury system. We don't just want hit points. We wanted your arm to get blown off if that happened, or you go, you know, different specific crippling injuries, because we want you to also be able to replace your arm with a robotic arm that might have advantages to you, or, you know, your eye gets damaged and you get a sort of robotic implant that gives you various... It makes you uglier in the game. It ruins your appearance, but it might help you if you're encountering the mutants, because they like it when you're ugly. So we want to... You know, there's a lot of weird cultural stuff in there, and it's a steep learning curve. But the game itself can take 2 hours once you get it down, 3 hours like that. And if you want the full, rich... If you're more of a role-play Arkham Horror... kind of, you want a 4-hour thing, it's all there. Like, you can really run it out and have bigger vehicles and crazier weapons and customize your, you know, your robotic parts and all the rest of it. You get mutations. I mean, there's a lot of, it's, you know, 10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound bag, really.
So it sounds like it's going to be a big hit, I think, with, like, people who like to fall back on this, oh, I'm too old to play full-blown RPGs anymore. Like, I don't have time to, like, plan adventures. I mean, like, you can just jump into this, get an RPG experience with no planning.
But I think it's going to be a big hit with people that aren't morons with no taste.
Well,
that's the more important.
It's not. This is really. Not, it's funny showing it. We showed it at a couple conventions, and there are people who spy it across the room and run up, and we're like, "Tell me this is post-apocalyptic!" Like they're really excited. Like this is what they've been looking for. Kind of, you know, that this kind of RPG.
Plus I'm one of those people.
Mutants plus all this stuff. And then other people see it and go, oh, my God, like, get me away from it. This is not my kind of thing. Like, people are just not into this. It's so many moving parts. As I say, there's, in addition to, you can get irradiated and get mutated and get some weird effect on you, or you can get your leg crippled, or your vehicle's tires can get damaged. There's a lot of bad stuff that could go wrong. But we basically made the game that we always wanted to play, where if you can't enjoy that stuff, happening to yourself and the other players, you know, the post-apocalyptic world might not be for you. You know, we want it to be it's a harsh place, but you know, the strong may excel.
Yeah, them the ropes.
If you were going to say, like, and you know, I know you mentioned Merchant of Venus, mm-hmm. like what else would you say? And Car Wars, you know, like, are those the two big inspirations? And then Fallout, you know? Or did you sort of start with Fallout and then think, all right, how can we do this in a game
situation? It was sort of Fallout, Road Warrior, A Boy and His Dog, The Blood of Heroes, Planet of the Apes. Like, our world sort of encompasses a lot of it. Not as many as the new Gamma World does, which is kind of, they claim every single thing under the sun. But ours, we have a very specific timeline of how terrible shit went, the world went south, and all these various things popped up. And
So you'd say that the game was primarily designed from this is a fucking cool idea, like, how are we going to make that work in the game?
Oh, we started, yeah.
As opposed to, like, well, I have this wonderful combat simulation that I would like to, you know, bolt
on.
Or
what smarter people do, which is say, this would be popular. Let's do this game.
Yeah.
Instead.
Didn't do that.
No.
So it's got a lot of deck building, right?
It was me and Morgan Dontonville saying, like, what else would we like to see? What other ambitious, crazy stuff can we cram into this thing? Like, oh, also we want factions. Oh, also we want mutations. Oh, also we want random monsters. Lots of monsters and lots of, you know, oh, disease. We need disease. Also, you know, weird stuff happens to you. And because, like, I didn't mention Tales of the Arabian Nights. We have statuses sort of like Tales of the Arabian Nights with, you know, sort of mountains of terrible mm-hmm. woe betide you in the Arabian Nights if you pick the wrong choice. Ours, a lot of bad stuff can happen to you in the same kind of thing. Not the same emphasis as Tales, but it's hopefully as rich a narrative. Ours is actually a competitive game. You're competing over reputations that all the drivers are desirous of. So you might have the bully reputation. So whichever one of the drivers does the most attacking of the other players claims this reputation. And once you get enough number, there's a number of reputations out there. Once you get them, you win. That's how so it's sort of a race game in many ways.
What ties into one of the things that I really like about it too is that the narrative, you know, saying like the narrative is so important. And because you guys added so much chrome and so much sort of like little statuses and this and that, and there's like, you know, what were there, like 40 or 50 different starting character archetypes?
Oh,
you know,
well, we boiled it down to, we had 20, we boiled it down to 12 strong ones.
So still, you have 12, and then you have all these different things happening, and you can really feel like you are having this adventure. And because the game mechanically it rewards a variety of different paths to victory.
Right.
Like you can be like, well, this time I'm the mutant that drives around in the giant monster truck and just murders everyone, and that's how I'm trying to win.
Right. Or you could, the truck is sort of the apex vehicle. It's very rare that you get the truck early. You really have to work at it. But you could load the truck with weapons and be a lunatic and go hunting, mm-hmm. or you could, the truck is, it can carry the most cargo, and if, you know, that's one of the victory conditions in the game. Because the victory conditions aren't, you can have them random, or you can sort of choose a suite of interesting reputations, and that's we don't know that might be something unique to our game that we sort of added to the fold. I'm sure there's other games that have done this kind of thing where it's a handful of random victory objectives that everyone's competing over.
No, it's almost a Twilight Imperium. You know, you have like the objective deck, and
yes,
you have like
Twilight has that. Ours, we don't have new ones turn. Twilight, you game them as they turn face up, which is really fun. Ours is it has fixed ones that they're public.
Which I think is better because it's a more narrative experience, I think.
Right. Yeah, everyone, you kind of know what you're going for. Everyone knows what they're going for. Whether there's, you know, one is called Money Back, so it's whoever has the most money. Last time we played, Morgan had that one. He had the most money, but he knew I was gunning for him because I was going for the combat psycho guy. Yeah. And he spent all his money to get a really good gun, and then I pulled into town and dropped off a couple of passages, so then I got Money Bags, and I was able to win the game because he foolishly took his eye off the ball. So
well, I think
there is, you know, there is that game to it. And the combat itself, the driving around part, does have, I don't want to say chess-like, God knows, but it has, there is some tooth to it. It's not the sort of tactical combat game where you constantly drive behind the guy and shoot him from the rear, and then he drives in a big circle and shoots you from the rear because that's the best bonus. Like, physics doesn't work that way. You know, our cars, the faster you go, the harder it is to turn, et cetera, as you can imagine, you know. And we have opportunity fire. So there's some meat on the bone. And hopefully people will be psyched to play it. You know, it has the RPG part. It also has the combat part. It also has the trading part. That was our delusional ambition at the beginning when we first started this thing. We want a game that will appeal to the fat audience that really want to go driving around and blasting and tweaking their stats. We want a game that will appeal to the war gamers because the combat part of it is actually kind of chewy, and there's opportunity fire and aiming and stuff like that, terrain. And then it also to appeal to the Euro guys who might want to concentrate on the pick up and delivery part of it, or the the passengers or the cargo part of the thing, and the political aspect of it. So you really, there's multiple routes to victory. Who knows? You know, like right now it's going under testing. Everyone who plays it enjoys it, but it's a big commitment to get testers to build this damn thing. It's got a lot of pieces.
It's not going to be the next Ticket to Ride, but it's it's not going.
It doesn't
for
sound
that,
like
you know,
Magic Realm either, though.
No, yeah. I mean, I found that it was.
It gets pretty intuitive.
It wasn't the
easiest
game, but yeah, it's story based. You know, the game, everything is based on story, and albeit a fucked up future reality, sort of a reality. You know, like when you get things that say like helps your steering, you know what that means.
Right.
It's not abstract concepts. Yeah. You look at stuff, you know, money bags. Oh, I don't even have to get up and look at this objective.
Right.
It's like
we try
make
to make
money.
Magic Realm is sort of its own quirky masterpiece, but it's all abstractions. It's fantastic, but it's, you know, you really have to. The system is so unusual. This we try to make it somewhat intuitive. Once you see. You can't look at it and figure it out, but once you say, okay, if my character is irradiated, we put little play aids down. If you get too much radiation, you'll mutate, and you draw a little mutation card. Or if you visit certain garages, they'll teach you maneuvers. You get a maneuver card, and it's very kind of clear what you do with it all. It has, hopefully, people have the patience for it, because it is ambitious.
Well, if they pick it up, if they've heard about it for a while, they should have patience, because it's been a while.
Hmm. There's a lot of pieces.
No, I mean, it's worthwhile. I think it's worthwhile.
But, like, building the kit, we've got a couple of playtest groups that have managed to build the kit. One guy has sort of been working away on a cyber version, which is awesome. But even that, it's interactive. You know, it's really interactive. So emailing back and forth, I don't know how you would even do it to test it out. At least for the combat system, is highly interactive. As we drive towards each other and shoot at each other, I don't know how you would email that back and forth. It would take forever because the game is.
I like people to play, play by email Twilight Imperium, and it takes like a year.
I guess so. I guess so. Maybe, you know, they do that. That's pretty interactive too.
It's people who do it.
So maybe that would be great.
So you want to talk about other stuff because you're not just a. Game design actually, legend in the making, or do we want to keep talking about
it? No, I mean, this kind of segues, you know, I want to talk to you actually about post-apocalyptic movies.
Okay.
Because I've watched a lot of them, you know.
Uh-huh.
Pretty big fan of the genre, thanks to Fallout. And, I just wanted to know, like, what do you think is, like, the best? What is the best? I mean, like,
at least
narrow it down to, like, three or five or whatever.
We used to say that this is sort of a segue. We used to say that Monty Python and the Holy Grail was the best movie ever made because King Arthur was the best story. And the best King Arthur movie was Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So therefore, Monty Python and the Holy Grail had to be the best movie. As far as this goes, like I would say The Road is the best post-apocalyptic movie. I really like The Road, but it's certainly not appropriate for this.
Yeah, right.
I thought that was great. You know, parts of something like, we were talking about The Book of Eli, which is schizophrenic. It's got some great stuff, and then it's just awful.
Yeah, the end is a turnoff
it's
for
awful.
Me.
It's awful, and it has Gary Oldman playing Gary Oldman again.
Yeah.
Like, ridiculous character again, if anyone has seen it. But as far as other post-apocalyptic masterpieces, Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's an awesome one. We have one of our factions is sort of partially that's sort of like advanced mental-powered mutant. We have that kind of thing. They're not mutants. They're a different kind of breed in Scorched Earth. So that's sort of inspired by those guys.
Cool.
So I have a contentious point to bring up in this. Okay. How do people feel about including Escape from New York?
That's definitely post-apocalyptic.
Well, I mean, it's not. There's not really an apocalypse that happens.
Well, clearly, right? New York has been cut off from the country and made into a prison. It's been relatively shocked to the system.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's not, but there's not, you know, I mean, it seems as though civilization
is still.
You
don't need to have deserts.
Well, that's my argument. I'm siding with you. I'm just saying. I think that.
No.
Escape from New York,
I think it's contentious.
I think it's a wasteland. Yeah. It's a wasteland.
Yeah, because I would say that is my favorite.
That's a good one.
It's a damn good movie. I just rewatched it like a month ago. And it
covers a lot of bases.
It does. It does. I mean, they packed a lot in one movie.
Are you zombie fans?
Yeah, I count zombie movies too, yeah.
Yeah, I can like zombie movies. I don't love zombie movies, so like if they're unusual, I'll like the unusual parts. I'm not a huge fan just inherently. Like I really enjoyed the book World War Z, and they're making that into a movie. I'm kind of psyched at how they do it, but I suspect they're going to put a relationship through the middle of it, which kills it. At some point, I'd like to talk about relationships in adventure films. We can get to that later.
We can do that.
But as far as other post-apocalyptic things, Blood of Heroes is one that is terrific. It's terrific. It's a sports film. Mm. It just follows the sports film, but it's in the post-apocalyptic world with Rutger Hauer and Joan Chen. And it's this great athletic. It's really, you must see it. Other post-apocalyptic masterpieces?
The Running Man?
Yeah, I mean, just the best. You know?
I guess.
The Running Man. Yeah, that's good.
No one wants to say Road Warrior?
No,
I mentioned Road Warrior.
Road Warrior is kind
of
like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
To be honest, I mean...
That's probably the best.
I think Road Warrior is a much better movie, but I like Thunderdome.
Do you?
It's fucking stupid, but I think that's why I like it.
I like the thing with the plane.
Well, because
like
I think
the myth that those kids have about the plane, I thought that was kind
of
cool.
I don't like kids in films at all. I don't mind. We have a faction of feral kids.
Yeah. Really looking forward to Ender's Game then.
You know, I don't know Ender's Game.
Edit this out.
The feral kids is a great archetype. Logan's Run is another great post-apocalyptic one. Thunderdome, it stops taking itself seriously. Like the kids,
I think that's why I kind of like it. You know, I mean, I said, I think the other two are.
I think it's too
better.
Easy. I think it's too easy to take silly things and make fun of them. Like the trick is to make them give them dignity. That's the trick, to give something, make something, you know, dignified. My opinion. It's my interview. I can say what I want.
Yeah. We want you to be even more contentious. Can you be more contentious, combative?
Am I being combative?
No. Could you be more?
I thought you might fight me on that Watchmen thing, but
I love
Watchmen. Whatever.
I think it's terrific.
Well, it's two against one, so who the fuck cares?
I hate it.
Oh, well, you both hate it.
No, I like it.
Oh, I thought you liked it. I thought you hated it.
No, I like it. I was disappointed. I thought it could have been better, but I thought it was great.
Just because superheroes have problems doesn't mean that we should be ashamed of superheroes, which the brilliant, groundbreaking graphic novel sort of tells us that they something. It's not just that they have problems, but they should be ashamed of themselves. Like it's something to be hidden. It's something that because I think at the time what it meant for people is we should be ashamed of superhero comics. Like you should be ashamed that you're still reading this stuff. I should be ashamed that I'm still writing this stuff. Maybe I'm psychoanalyzing it too much, but I think those are some themes in the comic. Go back and read it now. Even though it was groundbreaking stuff and no one had ever said anything like it, God bless them, I wouldn't harm any of his billions of hairs on his head, Alan Moore, because he's, you know, one of the, he's the greatest genius.
Yeah.
But the X years later, the movie is in praise of superheroes. And I think if you question the value of superheroes to begin with, don't do a superhero movie already. We get it. They have problems. We get it. That was actually my whole career at DC Comics. Stop making them so fucked up. Like, it's already fucked up. They're right. Built in. The fucked up is built in. You don't have to make the stories how much more fucked up they are.
DC, I don't think, is nearly as... I don't think DC is nearly in tune with that, you know, trying to make heroes more fucked up to make them more relatable as Marvel is, but...
I think it's a popular... Make them more... Just bring them... Pop the clean bubble of superheroes and make them more grittier. Make them... Down, you know, bring them down to earth further to make them more relatable. And I think that's what she
it, it has nothing to do with being fucked up, you know. Look at, I just reread the Green Arrow and Green Lantern books from the 70s.
The Denny O'Neill stuff?
That's an awesome way to bring heroes more down to earth.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, like, that
God
was.
Bless him.
I mean, like.
I owe Denny O'Neill my career. In comics. I was his assistant. That was the first job I had at DC. And he promoted me up.
You worked on some cool stuff, though. I mean, like, there was some stuff that you were there for. I know that you and I at one point talked about Blind Justice a little bit, which is by Sam Hamm.
Sam Hamm and Dennis Cowan.
Yeah, I think that that's a super underrated Batman story that everyone who's interested in Batman needs to get their hands on. Because I think that it's one of the hidden gems.
Was a great writer. I don't know what other stuff he did at the time, and I'm not really up on what has been going on in comics recently, so I really don't know if he's maybe writing the X-Men for all I know.
I think that was it. I think that was the end of his comic writing.
He was a screenwriter.
Right.
Actually, he had worked on at the time even a Watchmen draft way back when.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if his name's on the version that Zack Snyder directed.
Probably not.
That was great. Denny edited it was the 600th issue of Detective Comics. That was Blind Justice, and it was a 3-part story.
Yeah.
I was the assistant editor, so my job was to hire all the Denny couldn't be bothered with hiring all the pinups and notes. We got a whole bunch of luminaries to comment on it. It was really fun calling up, you know, Will Eisner and all these other guys when I was just a little punk. And commissioning pinups. What can be more fun? You know, commissioning pinups from Dick Sprang and, you know, Bob Kane, literally, you know, calling him Bob Kane.
So thanks, Dan, for coming by the Fat Cave. It was awesome talking about Scorched Earth and your DC Comics stuff. So thank you very much.
For those of you that are interested in what Dan's up to and want to find him on the web, too fucking bad, because Dan's not really into that stuff. So, you know, keep your eyes glued to the Fortress Meritrash, though, because we will give you all the hot scoops on Dan Raspler and what he's up to.
So that does it for this episode of the Fat Cast, episode 2. If you've got comments, questions, let us know. You know, we love talking to you guys. So send us some messages if you want, and we'll talk about it on the show. So that does it for us here at the Fat Cave.
And remember, keep your dick flippers off my space castle.
You've been listening to Fat Cast. You can find us on the web at FortressAT.com.
This is Josh. Look, and my whistles definitely go woo woo.
And I just don't give a shit.